From the Land Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report. It is the 8th day of August, 2018. I'm Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Jackie Vake. She's from Stuart Peterson. Drew Lerner will be here from World Weather Incorporated in Kansas City to tell us about the weather forecast in Canada, the United States, Europe, Australia, and China. We'll do that early in the program today. And then as we wrap up our time together, we'll take a look at the agricultural news for the afternoon on this Wednesday edition of the Closing Market Report, a production of Illinois Public Media. It is public radio for the farming world. Find us online at WILLAG.org.
Todd Gleason services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Let's check in now with Jackie Vakes from Stuart Peterson here on Illinois Public Media's Closing Market Report to take a look at what happened in Chicago for the day and talk a bit about the marketplace. Good afternoon to you, Jackie. Thanks so much for being with us.
Oh, good afternoon, Todd.
Let's start with the weather story. What do we know that's of interest to you here in the United States or across the planet?
They're more focused, I believe, on what's going on here in the U.S. at this point in time. Like we said last week, you know, ridge, no ridge, up, down. Today, we're actually, we were up on the markets, and I think it was primarily because they're talking about ridging coming in. They're talking about temperatures returning to above normal and moisture at a less than normal level. And so we'll see if this has the ability, though, to, you know, trump what's going on with the USDA this week. The weather everywhere is rather strange. When you look into Europe, you know, and you look at all of the fires that are going on there, we look here in the U.S. with all the dryness and the fires that are going on here, you know that has to have an impact in terms of upper atmosphere and potential things that can happen. I have a friend who out in Colorado, they actually had softball size hail in some areas, which is, I mean, I've never seen in my lifetime, and I don't want to ever see. But that's something that they don't normally get either. They get hail, but not anything that large. And so I really think that our weather is being directed more by everything that's happening around us in the upper jet stream, just because of the fires that are going all over the world right now.
We often talk about where money is in the marketplace, and ahead of this USDA report, I'm wondering if we have an idea what the managed money is up to.
Well, I think it's I'm glad you asked, because I think this is an interesting situation. When we look at managed money, we actually saw them increase their spring wheat long contracts from 41,000 last week to 48,000 this week, but they reduced their soy meal contracts from 61,000 long last week to 43,000 long. So that tells me they've got a few questions about what's going to happen on this next report. From a short standpoint, last week we were short 76,000 corn. This week it's only 43,000. But last week we were short 43,000 beans. Now this week it's 67,000. And I think many times our listeners hear us talk about spreading and unwinding and that type of thing. Well, that is exactly what this looks like. This looks like they've moved over and decided that they unwound some of their spreads between corn and beans, and are continuing to do that during the week this week. Now, the net short in soy oil itself, and we normally see meal against oil, increased from 89,000 contracts last week to 93. And so you saw meal contracts long went down and soy oil contracts short went up. So you've got to wonder what I think that they're probably spreading them against beans prior to this report, but we'll know more once Friday rolls around.
We've been going through the support and resistance levels. Let's get those put in place before we talk about the USDA numbers.
Last week, I started talking about first support, second major support, and same thing with resistance, and I'm going to continue that this week. I got some good feedback on that. For September, first support 357, second 337, major 305. I hope we don't see any of that. But first resistance, 379, we still have that gap from June between 398 and 3/4 and $4. And, of course, major resistance up there at 420 and 3/4. December, our support numbers are 380, 369, and then 350. So that's improved a little bit from last week. Resistance, 390, we have a gap between 410 and 410.5. And then 429.5 is the major resistance on beans. September, Support is at 875, 816 and a half, and 721 and a half. Now, I know when I say 721 and a half, I'm talking major support. First resistance, 911, then 940, and then 1065. November, support, 915, 881, and then 826 and a quarter. And resistance, 915, 970, and 1060 and a half. So just a few changes this week compared to where we were last week, and some improvement in corn and a little bit less improvement in beans.
Friday, the United States Department of Agriculture released the crop production and WASDE figures. What are your expectations?
Well, I'll tell you what. One of the things that is, I think, on everyone's mind is when they look at this report, will it reflect the tariffs that we've been talking about? So I looked that up, and it says it's only going to reflect tariffs that are currently in place or have had formal announcements of an effective date. In other words, that says to me the 25% on some stuff and 10% on other stuff will be what they'll be using to accumulate their data. Now, this is the first report, Todd, that we've got where they've actually been out in the field. And the expectations are that corn production is going to be higher than it was in July, but lower than a year ago at 14.4 billion. Soybean production also higher than last month at 4.4 billion, but lower than last year, slightly higher than last year at 4.3 billion. So the bean side of it, you can see where there's some negative implications. Corn yield, 176.3. I think that might be a little light, but they were 174 last month, and last year we were at 176.6. With the weather, they might be a little hesitant to go up too much more than a couple bushels at a time. Soybean yields, 49.8. Higher than last month, and last year we were at 49.1. When you look at wheat definitely came in a little lower than, about 30 million lower than last month at 1.85 billion, but higher than last year at 1.74 billion. So, you know, we're in a situation where that doesn't bode well in some respects for corn, as well as the concerns that we may see a lot more corn planted this year, depending upon what our exports actually do in the end. When you look at carryout numbers, Todd, kind of interesting. They basically lowered the corn carryout number by just a few million bushels on average to just over 2 billion. Beans went down by 4 million to 461, and wheat stayed virtually the same. When you look at 18-19, they basically raised the carryout by around 80 million bushels. And, that's going to be reflected on the fact that they raised production. Soybeans went from 580 to 641, expectation for this report. And wheat went down from 985 last month to 959. At the world levels, changes were there, but not huge. We saw the corn number go down just slightly. We saw the bean number go down slightly. We saw the wheat number go down slightly. Now, that's for 17-18. When you look at the corn number for 18-19, basically stayed pretty much the same. Beans went up just slightly, and wheat went down by about 5 million metric tons. So it had the biggest move there too. So it's going to be very interesting as we go into this and actually see what they come out with.
And those numbers, of course, again, due out at 11 o'clock on Friday morning. That's Central Time. You'll find them on our website as soon as I can pick them up. And that might be an interesting process this time around, because everybody will be going in. USDA stopped allowing some of the press who are locked up from getting those numbers and releasing them early on, and others, too, to some of their clientele. So it'll be a mad dash, I suppose. We'll see how quickly that happens, but we'll get to it and should show up on our website by, 11:05 or so, if not sooner. Yeah. The other thing that you've been watching for a while and giving us a heads up on are some of the numbers that Dr. Cordonnier has been using. He, of course, is a regular on our Commodity Week program, but you've got a line to him. Have those changed much this week?
They absolutely did not change at all, which I think most people will find interesting. We still have 67.5% of the states in corn above trend line, 64.3% above trend line in beans, 8.1% above trend line in corn, and 16.4% above trend line in beans. You know, and basically the other two, the states haven't changed very much, Todd, at all over the last, let's say, 3 or 4 weeks. We do have an expectation we might see some of the states move a little bit higher. We're also going to see some of the states probably move lower as we move forward. You know, one of the things that's going on is when you look at, you know, the overall picture of crop condition ratings, which is what this is somewhat based off of, but certainly what we trade off of, is that when you have a crop that's quite a bit ahead like we have this year, you know, your crop ratings may go down, but it may not be an indication that the crop is actually really suffering. You know, it's just moving along in its maturity levels. And so we'll see once. This has been pretty good over the years for me, and so I thought that it'd be a good thing to share with everybody because we tend to get all excited when we see things changing, but that doesn't always necessarily mean in the end that's the way it's going to end up.
Hey, speaking of all excited, grain inspection's not so bad this week, especially for soybeans.
No, yeah, I tell you what, I was pretty excited, to be truthful. I mean, corn came in at 50.6 million bushels, beans came in at 32.8, which means that beans just eked by what we're looking at for them to be able to get to where they want to go, and corn really, really did well. And so, you know, I'm going to keep watching that, and I keep talking about that every week as we move toward the end of the crop year at the end of this month. Just those things are just so important to us. They can roll sales forward, but you can't change inspections because everything is based on inspections. That's another number that we'll certainly be looking at when we get the report on Friday as to, you know, what the USDA's bias is in terms of are we actually going to ship more. But one of the things, Todd, I think that's interesting here is, you know, when you look at all these numbers, they certainly don't sound very pretty for the bean situation, considering that, you know, this whole tariff thing is going on and everything else. And yet the beans seem to be pretty positive most of the time. And so I think some of that is a reflection, you know, we've been talking about Brazil for a while. Some of that, I believe, is a reflection of the fact that Brazil's having a really, really tough time being able to get the beans to where they need to be. Now, China's always going to say, oh, they're wonderful, they're marvelous, they're excellent. But I'll tell you what, I think something that is really going to, is helping us. I don't know, I shouldn't say is going to. I believe it's helping us right now. And that's just the fact that we've seen such a step up in some of these other countries. I have to wonder to myself if we don't have China sourcing our beans from someone else, just so that you're not, you know, you're not seeing them on our records, which of course plays into the negative world. And so when I looked at Brazil today to talk about it, it looks like they may plant 3 to 4% more beans down there. But there's just so many things going on, Todd. I tell you, as a farmer, you know, forward contracting is really slow. And I would venture to think that our U.S. farmers, too, would be slow if they didn't have any idea what their input costs were going to end up being, and whether or not they could ship the farm and, you know, ship it and get it from the farm to the commercial. And, you know, the commercial's not too crazy about forward contracting right now either because they don't know what's going on. So prices at the moment down in Brazil are so good just because of the fact that the real has weakened so much against the U.S. dollar. It wasn't that long ago that we saw an exchange rate down there of about 3.17, you know, in that area. And that's improved dramatically now. Here comes the rub. They have a presidential election coming up in October. And financial reform, you know, is the number one issue that is on the docket. And, you know, this could cause the real really to gain against the dollar. So I still think that all of the turmoil that's going on down there and until it's settled is going to give us support in the market. Am I saying we couldn't go back down to 826? No. But I also am saying that I think that we have opportunities to see if you haven't marketed, you might have an opportunity to still be able to catch something along the way. I mean, these prices are back above $9 again, and that's a good thing.
Hey, thanks so much. We appreciate it. We'll talk with you again next week.
You betcha. Thanks, Todd.
That, of course, is Jackie Vakes. She is with Stuart Peterson. In today's agricultural news, something directly from the USDA to start us off with, Chinese tariffs on U.S. soybeans have thrown soybean trade patterns into what one expert there calls unfamiliar territory. Gary Crawford talks with Bryce Cook and Seth Meyer.
For the first 9 months of this fiscal year, October through June, exports of U.S. soybeans
are down 10% in value terms, 6% in volume.
USDA trade economist Bryce Cook says soybean sales to China began shutting down even before the tariffs took full effect. But USDA Outlook Board Chairman Seth Meyer says soy exports are doing a little better than some had expected, but projecting how they're going to end up is going to be very hard.
Over the last decade, we've developed this six-month marketing year, which has been dominated by China. And that makes it really difficult for us to know what to expect in terms of now, because U.S. soybeans are on sale, we've done a fair amount of business counter-seasonally, and most of that business hasn't been to China, it's been to other countries because U.S. beans are on sale.
And so Meyer says we are in
unfamiliar territory in terms of the pattern of trade right now.
Nonetheless, USDA is putting out new supply, export, and price forecasts for beans and other crops this Friday, noon Eastern Time. Gary Crawford for the U.S. Department of Agriculture, Washington.
Let's stay with trade and China for the moment. The U.S. chief agricultural negotiator is attacking both China and India for exceeding their WTO spending limits on farm subsidies that distort trade. We think China has done in excess of $100 billion more in subsidies to its farmers than it was allowed to do, says USDA's Greg Dowd. He was speaking at the American Sugar Alliance's International Sweetener Symposium in Traverse City, Michigan. He accused India of vastly exceeding its subsidy limits on rice and wheat, while also drawing attention to the country's recent moves to increase subsidies to its sugar producers as a cushion against a drop in world prices. Dowd also tried to allay concerns about the Trump administration's trade policy, which has disrupted agricultural markets for the past year and a half. He told the group that the administration was pushing to quickly wrap up talks on NAFTA and looking for new export opportunities in Canada, Japan, and Europe. One more item from the United States Department of Agriculture for the day is Rod Bain has more with Ag Undersecretary for Farm Production and Conservation, Bill Northey, on the acreage sign-up deadline for Continuous Conservation Reserve Program offerings.
For producers and landowners considering acreage enrollment in USDA's Continuous Conservation Reserve Program, the deadline is approaching, Friday, August 17th.
Continuous enrollment CRP is land that, if it meets the qualifying characteristics that are needed for one of the programs in continuous enrollment, that may be a buffer strip or a grass waterway, other kinds of continuous enrollment practices, that land is qualified if it meets the standards that are set up according to the program.
Agriculture Undersecretary for Farm Production and Conservation Bill Northey reminds producers there is no general CRP sign-up this year. However,
we are also offering extensions to those that are eligible of existing contracts that would expire at the end of this fiscal year, September 30th.
Producers can enroll in continuous CRP through their local Farm Service Agency office. I'm Rod Bain reporting for the U.S. Department of Agriculture in Washington, D.C.
And I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason. You've been listening to the Closing Market Report on this Wednesday afternoon. Find us online at WILLAG.org. You're listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. I'm U of I Extension's Todd Gleason. Drew Lerner is here from World Weather Incorporated in Kansas City. I believe we have a whole lot of globetrotting to do this afternoon. Let's begin in Canada, in the southern prairies there. Can you tell me a little bit about that area? I think they've been pretty dry and maybe are getting pretty hot, too.
Yeah, the overall environment has been just deplorable here for a big part of the summer in southern and central parts of Saskatchewan and southeastern portions of Alberta. This is a very important wheat and barley producing area, as well as some canola. And it has been drier than normal for quite some time, and now we're going to see a strong ridge of high pressure build over the area. Temperatures coming up here over the next 3 to 4 days will run in the 90s to about 104, 105 degrees. For Canada to get that kind of heat, that's unusual, let's put it that way. It's not something that doesn't ever happen, but it's pretty rare, and the crops are already hurting, so this is going to be final blow, perhaps, for some of the crops up there.
Well, let's stay with the small grains and tour the rest of the planet. Most of them, of course, are now in the process in the northern hemisphere. Western Europe's been pretty dry, and that area suffered as well.
That's correct, and a large part of the harvest is already complete in France and pretty far advanced in Germany because of the dry weather. So the dryness that's occurring right now is more of a coarse grain issue, but there certainly was a reduction in small grains across most of Western and Northern Europe, France, Germany, the UK, Scandinavia, where we don't talk too much about, and even parts of Poland. Now, the weather is about to change. Today's the last day of the hot, dry days that have been going on for weeks now, and we're going to see a notable cooling trend, not necessarily cooler than normal, but getting temperatures back to normal, and that's a big step in the right direction. And then there's two frontal systems that will bring opportunities for rain to France and Germany and parts of Scandinavia. Doesn't look like there's going to be a lot of rain in the United Kingdom. But anyway, the bottom line is there's hope here that maybe enough moisture will fall to improve some of that corn crop and some of the soybeans that are produced in the southern parts of those two countries.
Let's stay with those crops and visit China, where they have the second largest corn crop on the planet. And it, like ours, is in the middle of the end of the growing season.
Yeah, and you know, China has had very interesting weather this year. There's been several bouts of drier than usual conditions, but they always lasted for just long enough to start stressing crops, and then we'd get this timely rain event, and all of a sudden everything's all roses again. So they may have a little loss in yield because of these frequent bouts of dryness, but because they keep getting relief, I think they're going to have a fairly decent crop this year, both corn and soybeans. And even spring wheat up in the north, I think, has done fairly well. So China looks good and will probably stay that way for a while.
From China, let's go down under to Australia and visit a wheat crop that is, or about to be, I'm not sure which, to be put in the ground for the fall.
Yeah, the majority of the planting, I believe, is complete at this point for wheat and barley and canola, too. We're actually just a few weeks away from the start of what normally is reproduction for Queensland and northern New South Wales. They start usually in the last days of August and into the first 10 days to 2 weeks of September. But they've been enduring a prolonged drought. It's over a year long. There was some moisture in March, and I think there was some last October, but that was it. And it's been very, very dry. Some of the planting in dryland fields never got completed, or the crop has not responded well to the moisture that's out there in very uneven stands. Production potentials are definitely down. And with the outlook being what it is, there's not much hope for rain coming up for the next 2 weeks, which will present us at the threshold of reproduction. And boy, it's going to have to rain pretty good in those last days of August, early September, to make a change.
And finally, come back here to the United States in the Midwest. We're looking still pretty decent.
We are. We have pockets that are dry. You know, southern Iowa has been missing rain for the last 3 or 4 weeks now, and they do have a little pocket there that's becoming much too dry, similar to what has been present in northeast Kansas and parts of Missouri and even some western Illinois locations periodically over the summer. But these are the only areas that are really hurting significantly at the moment, and even Missouri picked up on some rain here this week. So it's most of the Corn Belt is in fairly good shape. Our subsoil moisture is still adequate in many, many areas, but Michigan and parts of southern Iowa, Missouri, and Kansas still are on the radar for watching as we go forward through the balance of this month.
Thanks so much. We appreciate it.
Have a great day.
You too. That's Drew Lerner. He's with World Weather Incorporated in Kansas City.